Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Welcome to November. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. And Halloween's in the rearview mirror. There still might be a scary martini or two as we get going here. But the good martini, once again, is a very complicated location for us today, Jim, because it's certainly not without problems. And Jim will explain one of those problems in a minute. And one of the things that I've taken away from the last 24 hours here, Jim, is that while this is not a good story for Herman Cain, and his explanations and certainly the explanations of his campaign staff have not been super strong or super consistent, by the end of the day, it seemed like there was a whole lot more smoke than fire here. We don't know for sure, and that's one of the reasons that you're not too happy with the Cain supporters, but I'll let you address that in a moment. What I found interesting is how Politico is handling this. In speaking with Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC yesterday, Jonathan Martin, who is one of the handful of reporters who worked on this story, had this to say.
There are more questions here for him to answer. He has not yet explained what exactly he was accused of. He just said that he didn't do it. But these are serious charges.
He's been investigating this along with several colleagues for apparently a few weeks, and he still doesn't know what the accusations are. I know this was sealed, but if you've got enough sources to make you think you've got a good story, that's pretty flimsy. So either they know that it's nothing, or they're waiting for a better time to drop the other shoe. Later, you had Mike Allen, who was talking, I think, on MSNBC this morning, who, when Joe Scarborough asked what the actual allegations were, says, well, I think he said something that somebody felt was inappropriate. But hey, our Twitter feed yesterday was awesome. So way to go, mainstream media. Way to keep the priorities in order.
I'm not even sure Politico should be given the mainstream media moniker, not just for the standard conservative argument of the mainstream media isn't really mainstream. Politico is just kind of now in its own separate universe in which they just get some crusade in their heads. And the current crusade is get Herman Cain. This is also an institution that was never that into looking into the John Edwards allegations. Perhaps they were too busy with their fantastic early scoop that John Edwards would be leaving the race after his wife's diagnosis of cancer. A big, big Politico scoop that turned out to not be true, that I, you know, one of those things that I will not forget. Politico is behaving in an exceptionally bothersome way about this, because as you said, at the heart of the story is, well, so what exactly is Cain accused of doing? His account of things is that he compared a woman's height to his wife's height. Apparently that's a form of flirting that I just never picked up on.
Outrageous.
Right? I'm trying to get how you turn that into a sexually inappropriate comment. So we have this circumstance in which, according to Cain's account, this is an employee who must have just been unbelievably hypersensitive. And by the way, I'd be surprised if, you know, since Clarence Thomas hearings and sexual harassment became this big national issue, I think almost everybody in America has worked with at least one person who is hypersensitive about things. I was glad Herman Cain put out what he recalled as the source of the complaint, because now, oh, okay, this is just some person who has a ridiculous complaint. Now, perhaps there's something else out there, and if Politico has something else, they should, you know, I don't understand why you'd be sitting on parts of the story. I also would note that I have this suspicious feeling that if this was happening to a Democrat lawmaker, they wouldn't be nearly as interested. The double standard with the Democrat, between how the press treats Democrats and Republicans, has never been more vivid or illuminating or illustrated. Having said that, by the way, I am told that apparently three times per podcast I say the phrase "having said that," so I probably should avoid that. So I said this morning in the Morning Jolt, look, we don't know Herman Cain. We may think we know Herman Cain, and maybe a few listeners out there really do know Herman Cain personally, but none of us know with 100% certainty what happened between he and this employee or this, you know, apparently there were two separate cases. You look over Herman Cain's career, there aren't a lot of complaints, there aren't a lot of stories like this. So we can say, this smells very sketchy, this may have been somebody who just wanted to get a cash settlement, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't, you know, I was getting readers from, you know, writing in and saying, Jim, I know this is true, this is clearly a smear. Well, maybe not. And we can argue about what, you know, how likely it is, but I know folks who worked for Mark Sanford and totally believed in that guy and were blindsided by the scandal. I don't think, you know, there's a circumstance in which anybody can really say, I'm just kind of troubled by the degree to which certain people are saying this has to be a malicious falsehood. because we just don't know. And while we can say that we don't like the way Politico handled it, we can say we don't think this sounds like, much ado about nothing, I just have this terrible fear in the back of my head that at some point we get the other side of the story and it makes Herman Cain look worse. And I'm a little, bothered by the fact that we are insisting upon facts that are not in evidence. And so I'm very bothered by this. Already somebody has canceled their subscription to the Morning Jolt. Considering how it's free, I don't know how we deal with the financial hit from that, but I hope the reader always feels like they always got their money's worth. The other thing I'd say is, if hearing me say, look, we don't know whether Herman Cain did anything wrong or not, if that's too much for you to take, step away from the computer, take a walk, take a deep breath, because you're gonna run into people in this life who disagree with you about all sorts of things. So the idea that by saying, look, we don't know whether we don't know with absolute certainty whether he did anything wrong here, if that's somehow conservatism eating its own, then I think the bar has just gotten ridiculous. That we have to be all march in lockstep. That somehow I'm committing some act of disloyalty of saying, hey, we don't know you didn't do something wrong. So that is on my mind this morning, Greg. This takes us very far from the mentality of a good martini. But I am, as you can tell, my dander is up about some of the Herman Cain supporters this morning.
Yeah, jumping to conclusions in either direction, not smart. And you were certainly right about how the media reacts differently depending on which party's candidate is in the crucible on an issue like this. I still remember James Carville going on the mainstream media talking about how the Republicans basically took anyone that I think a tornado blew out of a trailer park when the Paula Jones scandal was going on. So
no, he said if you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park, who knows what you'll find.
Exactly. Well, there you go.
So yesterday I tweeted, I won't know what to make of these allegations until James Carville assesses the character of the accuser. he's got a business in that, and I guess according to the way the mainstream media treats him, that's his role in our society, to be the ultimate judge and arbiter of the credibility of sexual harassment claims. So when he weighs in, we'll all feel a lot better.
Exactly right. On to the bad martini now, and at the risk of appearing rather hypocritical, I quote a Politico piece as we look at two different stories now that make it pretty clear that Solyndra is not an isolated incident, Jim. Well, we got two more energy firms that got a lot of our taxpayer dollars that are just not in good shape. One is New York-based EnerOne, which received $118.5 million to expand its manufacturing operations, but now NASDAQ has pulled the firm from trading for failing to file its most recent quarterly report on time. The Department of Energy is following that, and now another company is filing for bankruptcy, Beacon Power Corporation, that apparently received about $43 million through the same federal program. So if there's a silver lining, even combined, they're far less than what we blew on Solyndra. But it's pretty clear that the president was following ideology rather than anything close to good investment strategy here and what would actually work.
Greg, you have to help me out here. Who was the bank robber who said, when asked why he robs banks, that's where the money is? Jesse James or Willie Sutton or
something
like that?
I think Willie Sutton sounds right.
So in a way, this kind of explains the philosophy of why we find corruption and why we find mismanagement and why we find circumstances like this. When the government says we're going to spend a bazillion dollars on a stimulus, now I exaggerate slightly, it was $787 billion, then this brings people running. And some of these people might have genuinely good ideas of how to create jobs with that money. But some of these people will not, and some of these people will be out and out corrupt and just want to get their noses in the trough, so to speak. And some of these folks will be somewhere in the middle. Some of these folks will have an idea that may have some potential, probably involves a certain amount of risk. And I believe it was Larry Summers who said the government makes a lousy venture capitalist. And yet this is what we're seeing in a lot of these programs, is that the government, full of people, maybe the folks in the Department of Energy are wise, smart folks, maybe they're being foolish and being all willy-nilly. Certainly in the case of Solyndra, we saw a lot of red flags ignored. The bottom line is that in all these cases, they're investing with somebody else's money. And that's what kind of creates this whole new element of moral hazard, that if you or I get together and we form the Greg and Jim Venture Capital Fund, people give us money, we invest in something, the investment fails, then we're on the hook for it. In government, the taxpayers pay, and then, President Obama just kind of shrugs his shoulders and say, hey, there's risk. What are you going to do? Hey, let me tell you about all those dangerous risk-taking that all those private sector banks are doing with their money, and you need to give me more power to stop that. You need to give me more power to do more risky investments with your money, and you need to give me more power so I can stop banks from doing more investment with their customers' money. And this is one of those times where I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. When you see stuff like this, and Obama makes these kinds of arguments, and nobody really gets all that bothered by it. So I'm just going to munch on Halloween candy, Greg.
Sounds good. On to martini number three now. And Jim, there's a lot of different opinions on whether, you know, the folks in Germany, which is the strongest economy in Europe, and its allies, France, England in particular, banding together and try to write off some of Greece's debt is really worth it in the long run, whether it's actually going to help salvage that country. Well, last week, after a whole lot of wrangling, a whole lot of stress, it looked like they had a deal, and the markets responded very positively. And now the leader of Greece has decided that, you know, this is all contingent upon austerity measures, which my people hate because they're not used to them. And so they're going to take it out on me. So rather than just agree to this and enjoy the fact that we get to live for another day, we're going to put this up for a referendum so the people will actually have the chance to reject the tremendous generosity of these larger, more stable economic powers in Europe. Talk about snatching potential defeat from the jaws of victory. Well done, Greece. Well done.
It's Nevada-esque, I guess you could say. You know, having said how much the good martini infuriated me, I'll give a certain satisfaction from our crazy martini. If there were no consequences beyond Greece's borders, wouldn't we be happy to let them say, all right, guys, you're on your own?
Pretty much.
If you want to reject austerity measures and you want to take the consequences of total financial collapse, go right ahead. You know, there's a part of me that wants to say that as conservatives, we should always have a certain wariness of public opinion. The masses may not always be right. They may be, you know, wrong. On the other hand, there's a little bit of be careful what you wish for. And so if the people of Greece do not want to accept any austerity measures, then let's see what happens to their society when the money runs out and when they can no longer go to France and Germany and all these other folks and say, you know, take care of me, because there's no one left to give you any more money. And let's see what happens when Greece's, you know, banks fail. My understanding is that the big issue there is that there are like a whole bunch of French banks that have a lot of Greek debt. And so that if Greece really goes down the tubes, you could see French banks going down the tubes, ATMs in Paris not working, and all the social unrest there. So apparently it's one of those things where if Greece sneezes, France catches a cold. And if that occurs, the rest of Europe is affected and, you know, the contagion spreads very quickly. If there were not consequences beyond the borders, you'd almost be willing to let the Greeks suffer the consequences of their own actions or inaction. Even in light of that, we have very limited influence over this. So let's hope that the Greeks and Europeans can solve their own problems, because shouldn't be looking to us to help it out.
Yes. And as a good Greek boy, you know, I have a hard time watching all this unfold. So fortunately, I'm not there. And secondly, the food's still really, really good. So, Jim, we'll end on that light note, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good day.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.